All right, so the memo here from Steve Jobs was addressed to the Apple board of directors and the Apple community. It might as well have been, though, memo to world. Here's the letter. I have always said, Steve Jobs writes, that if there ever came a day when I could no longer meet my duties and expectations as Apple's CEO, I would be the first to let you know. Unfortunately, that day has come. I hereby resign as CEO of Apple. I would like to serve, if the board sees fit, as chairman of the board, director, and Apple employee. As far as my successor goes, I strongly recommend we execute our succession plan and name Tim Cook as CEO of Apple. I've made some of the best friends of my life at Apple, and I thank you all for the many years of being able to work alongside you. Signed, Steve. So, joining us now, Stephen Levy, journalist for Wired Magazine and author of In the Plex, How Google Thinks, Works, and Shapes Our Lives, and The Perfect Thing, How the iPod Shuffles Culture, Commerce, and Coolness. Stephen, good morning.
Good morning.
And the great Canaletta joins us, who writes the Annals of Communications column for The New Yorker magazine, author of Googled, The End of the World as We Know It. Ken and Steve, thanks for being with us.
Pleasure.
The first question to both of you, and I'm going to play a little clip of tape here, is this era suddenly over? Listen.
IBM wants it all and is aiming its guns on its last obstacle to industry control, Apple.
So, Stephen Levy, will there be no more announcements of revolutions against Apple or the way things have been done? No more business as usual manifestos from Steve Jobs or the digital revolution?
Well, in a sense, that sounded like 20 years ago, and I actually covered the Macintosh opening for Rolling Stone, and the story was entitled, you know, how, you know, the whiz kids take on the empire, meaning IBM. I think that in the larger sense, you know, this era continues, and this kind of competition just with the different players keeps, you know, is as fierce as ever and more interesting because there's more players. But I think an era has ended because Steve Jobs was thought as the ultimate CEO there, and his just not being in that post is a big change. There's no-brainer answer anymore when you say who's the best CEO.
And Ken Aletta, your thoughts?
Well, I mean, I think one of the things that Jobs was brilliant at, because it was intrinsic and natural for him, is to create enemies and to be seen as the outsider, even though he was ultimately an insider. I mean, became at one point the most valued company in the world. But first it was IBM as the enemy, then it was Microsoft as the enemy. And despite years of success at Apple, Apple was a renegade, joined Apple, and loved being associated with Apple products because of this genius.
We're talking with Ken Aletta and Stephen Levy about the decision by Steve Jobs to resign as CEO of the company he founded. And we're not doing an obit here, but we are definitely talking about a milestone in America and the world's industrial history. Ken Aletta, you once compared Jobs to a kind of Thomas Edison of our time. I wonder if he's even bigger than that, since he embraces not only the sort of gadget invention piece, but also this huge sort of brand identity media manipulation piece as well.
Well, you know, Edison was a scientist, which Steve is not, and he invented, you know, many more things than Steve did, and arguably, without electricity, you wouldn't have the digital age we have today. So I would actually argue that if you go back to the 19th century, Thomas Edison's influence is greater than Steve Jobs. But what they both have in common is that Edison, not only came up with product ideas, but implemented them and brought them out to the public. And that's an extraordinary thing. So Steve Jobs is not only an inventor and a man of refined taste and defined taste, but also is a man who was a businessman, and Edison was as well.
Ken Aletta writes the Annals of Communication column for The New Yorker magazine. Stephen Levy is a journalist for Wired magazine. Stephen, what is it about Steve Jobs that causes him to look at gadgets not as something to be dumped on markets, but as open-ended kinds of devices that the users are allowed to define how it's used, and then the next device comes directly out of how users experience, say, the iPhone or the Macintosh? Why is he different that way?
Well, when you ask him this, he'll tell you again and again, we make products that we want to use. And a lot of people can say that, but he has a talent for putting himself into the place of a user, and he's his own best user. And what he brings to it, the products that he wants, are beautiful products where function follows form, and you know and he's actually not only changed the way technology products work, but how the products itself are delivered to consumers, because he builds design in from the very beginning, and you know his products are beautiful, but not as an accessory. They're beautiful because every single part of them works perfectly to deliver a great experience.
Although, you know, Apple has had some stumbles. And Canaletta, you've chronicled this in a number of corporations throughout your long career. You can have a company that designs stuff that they'd like to use, but that's also a good definition of a bubble where you lose sight of the broad market. How come Apple's corporate culture has not created an internal bubble, that their instincts jive with the rest of ours?
Well, I mean, first of all, you're talking about a man, Steve Jobs, who never did any market research. He went on his gut, the way arguably the early founders of television did. I like that show. I think the public will like it. Steve Jobs knew that you basically put out products. And if you think about, to pick up on my friend Steve's point here, think about when you opened an IBM product or a Microsoft package software product. You tried to read those directions, and you would spend hours trying to decipher what they were saying, how to do this, and yet you pick up an Apple product, and you didn't need directions. It was all very simple. And I think the other thing about Jobs that's worth noting is that he failed, and his failure made him a greater success later on. He learned from that. He learned to delegate, for instance.
We're going to trace that history in just a moment. Canaletta is going to stay with us. Stephen Levy, we're going to say goodbye to you. A final thought here?
I think that, you know, we should all hope. I know Apple has said that he's going to be an active chairman, and if it is, then he'd do the same kind of participation that he's been doing the past 8 months, the weighing in on strategic issues and product decisions. And, you know, during that time, Apple became, for the period, the most valuable company in the world. So let's hope he is indeed an active chairman.
And the investors in Apple probably hope the same as well. The more Steve Jobs says that, the better the stock is probably going to do. Stephen Levy is a journalist for Wired Magazine, author of In the Plex, How Google Thinks, Works, and Shapes Our Lives, and The Perfect Thing, How the iPod Shuffles Culture, Commerce, and Coolness. Thanks for being with us, Stephen. We're going to continue our discussion on Steve Jobs in just a few minutes.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.